This is Trainer Talk on HRRN Live. HRRN
Live. But it was all for Chuck McGee. Super Saver wins the Derby for Todd Pletcher.
The Salt will give trainer Steve Asmussen career win number 6,000.
It was all have another for Doug O'Neill.
Oxbow and D-Wayne Lucas. Trainer D-Wayne Lucas, a sixth win.
And Al's Rosie is going to give trainer Gary Contessa his 2,000th career win.
And dialed in, never got to them. It was Animal Kingdom for Graham Motion.
Steve Hobby with career victory number 1,000 at Oaklawn.
Presented by Basic Tipton. Now, here's Mike Penna.
Hello, everybody, and once again, welcome to Trainer Talk presented by Fasic Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch, my producer, Lee Delapina. We are with you in our Lexington, Kentucky studios and ready to visit with some of the people that help make this sport a success. And you know, we do this each and every week, and I get to talk to so many of the trainers in our sport, the men, the women that work tirelessly to put this sport in the limelight. And sometimes it's gratifying, sometimes it's not so gratifying, but that's the great part about this program. We get to hear their stories, their lives, their backgrounds, and how they got started in the business. And we kick things off this evening with the 38-year-old native of Bowie, Maryland. That's Bruce Brown. His family includes his wife and his son and twin daughters. He's had 348 winners. His runners are closing in on $13 million in purse earnings, and he is with me now to kick things off on Trainer Talk presented by Fasic Tipton. Bruce, thanks so much.
Yep, thank you.
Happy to have you on board. And look, I mean, this show is all about how so many trainers got started in the business and some of the people that helped them along the way. So where did this whole journey start for Bruce Brown?
Well, my brother Steve, who still trains around Pennsylvania and Delaware, he's 20 years older than me. He's number one in the family. I'm number seven. So just from the very beginning, I just always kind of wanted to be like big brother. So, that's when it all started. I remember working for him up at Penn National, just being up there with him when I was 10, 11 years old. And pretty much knew what I wanted to do from the get-go. I never really ever wanted to do anything else other than train horses. So.
All right, wait a minute. You said you're number seven? How many Brown siblings are there?
Ten altogether.
Ten? Well, I take it you're Catholic, right?
No. No, we have five boys, five girls.
Wow, that's amazing. Now, you and your brother, are you the only two that are involved in racing?
I had one sister that was involved at one point a little bit. Now she hasn't been involved in quite some time. She actually worked for my brother on and off a little bit. But other than that, my dad, dabbled in owning for my brother early on. But he doesn't. He pretty much just follows us now as a fan. But yeah, that's just me and him pretty much.
Do your other brothers and sisters ever call you and say, "Hey, you got any good tips for me?"
Not really. None of them are really even. They'll every now and then they'll notice that if I have something or something, but none of them are real big. It's weird. It's just me and my brother are really the only ones that have much. My dad follows it religiously, but when we have runners and stuff. But the rest of my family, they don't really. They don't really follow too much.
How did your brother get into it? Were your parents involved, or did he just fall into it some other way?
Just kind of growing up in Bowie with the track so close to us there when they were still running. I think just kind of one of those things where him and some of his friends just kind of found their way over to the racetrack for summer jobs or what have you, and just kind of got hooked that way.
Wow, that's amazing. Did your brother take you to the track for the first time?
Actually, my grandparents, they lived in Pennsylvania, and my brother was training there at Penn National. They would always take me because they owned horses here and there for my brother. So we would always go to the races, and that's kind of how I got going to the races, and then started working for my brother.
Did you have a favorite horse as you were growing up?
Yeah, there were a lot of them. I kind of, you know, you get attached to, especially at that age, because it's kind of that's to me, that's the kind of all there was. You know, that's all I really cared about was the horses. But I was, you know, I was a big John Henry and horses like that. You know, when I was little, I used to cut out all the articles and remember Little Bold John around Maryland. He was kind of an old timer in Maryland. That was a real good classy old horse. But had a bunch of them, but there's just a few that kind of stuck out.
Well, to date, you're only 808 wins behind your big brother.
He won his 1,000th race a few years ago, but he's had a successful career and never had the big numbers. You know, he's always been on the smaller scale. So,
were you still working with him when he won that 1,000th race, or were you already on your own?
No, I was. Yeah, he actually, when I first left home, I didn't actually go. When I was 18, I went to work for John Forbes in Jersey at Monmouth, and that's who my brother came up under. You know, so he kind of got me in with John. So actually, the first time I really went out on my own and left Maryland, I didn't go work for him. I went to work for Forbes, and then kind of stayed there with him for a while, and I was Tail the Cat's groom there for him, and then kind of got going on from there. Ended up in New York after that.
Now, I think I had read somewhere that Steve's lone graded stakes win to date came in the Grade 3 Gardenia at Ellis Park in August of 1994 with a horse called Alfabulous. Did I get that right?
Alfabulous, yeah. I actually got to take care of her a little bit after that, when towards the end of her career, when there was one little stint where I went to work for my brother. But yeah, that was always that was by far his one of his best horses. So.
And you said this is what you always wanted to do. You never considered doing anything else?
No. I can honestly say that I never really. I kind of knew what I wanted to do, from a very young age.
Talking with trainer Bruce Brown here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network. So after you worked with your brother for a short time, there were some other people you worked with as well. Talk to me about some of the other trainers that you learned from.
Well, like I said, John Forbes, he was a big part of, you know, the first time when I kind of was out on my own. I definitely learned a lot there. And then when I, in 99, I was first time I was really an assistant and in New York was for Billy Badgett for 1 year there. So that was kind of my first step into the big scene here in New York. And then after that, Timmy Hills was kind of my next, you know, I was assistant for him for a few years, and then I ran the string here in New York for him. And then that's when 2008, in January 2008, that's kind of when I went out on my own. And then that's been on my own since that.
You know, a lot of people have told me on this very same program that working for so many different people along the way has helped them become more well-rounded as a trainer. Is that kind of an accurate description for on your part as well?
Yeah. It's really, and you learn what to do and what not to do. In this game, there's so many different ways to kind of handle things and handle the same, you know, a lot of different ways to do the same thing pretty much. But you kind of learn the best, you know, kind of learn the best ways to do things and what ways not to do other things. But, it is good to get a good, you know, kind of get a good glimpse into how different people do things.
What did you take away from each of those individuals when you were working with them that you're still using today?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's just, yeah, it's a lot of, you know, with my brother, you know, it's just, he was in the very beginning. So it's just a lot of little basic things, just basic horsemanship stuff, just around the barn. With Badgett, it was more, that was kind of my first time in a big New York stable. You know, with Forbes, I was mainly just a groom, and that was a big step too, because with Tail the Cat, you know, got to really get into some big races and see what it was like to really have a top notch, grade one kind of horse. And then, with Timmy Hills, it was really being on my own, but not, you know, being assistant for him. It was, you know, he'd come up every now and then, but it was like being out on my own, but I still had him to fall back on. So that was kind of a big jump to have that responsibility, but I still wasn't the guy who had to make the phone calls to the bad phone calls to the owners, when stuff went wrong. So everybody, you know, it was every step really had a part in just helping me get to this point.
Yeah, and it sounds like you've kind of learned every step of the business along the way. You mentioned being a groom and then, you know, working with a good horse and Tail of the Cat. How beneficial is that experience, Bruce, starting kind of from the ground up like that, and how much is it helping you now?
Yeah, I mean, it's really, it helps you, you know, you can tend to get a little success in this game, and you can kind of forget where you came from, you know, and it kind of helps you stay grounded. You know, I slept in many a tack room and on many a bale of straw. You know, I really, I feel like I came up not so much the hard way, but I think the right way. You know, I really, you know, I didn't miss any steps along the way. I really, put in time at every different stop, you know, and hopefully now it starts to pay off for me.
When you are coming up like that and you're sleeping in tack rooms, does it ever cross your mind that, hey, maybe this isn't the career path that I should choose?
No, I always, you know, I just always believed that at some point, you know, I was going to get a break and things were going to click. You know, and the one thing is, it's a lot easier when you really love what you're doing. I mean, for this, in anybody in this game, you know, you're not going to last. If you, I mean, 7 days a week, you know, and the hours that we put in, you know, if you don't absolutely love what you're doing, you're not going to last in this game very long. You know, and that really helps, just, you know, enjoying coming to the barn in the morning and dealing with the people and the horses. That's what makes it enjoyable. And see, when you get a horse in as a young horse or claim a horse or whatever it might be, you know, and then win a race with that horse, that's what makes it all worthwhile, to see your work pay off, see that you do, that maybe you do know what you're doing, you know. So.
Yeah, and you talk about knowing that break was going to come. You always believed that you were going to get that big break. What was your first big break that really got you started?
Well, when I was working for Timmy here in New York, I met my now wife, Jenny, and her father, Billy Terrell, with our Sugar Bear stable. He gave Timmy some horses while I was still there, you know, and he was kind of my first shot at having horses on my own, you know, and it kind of made it easier, you know, knowing that when I did go out on my own, that I had those, you know, no matter what else happened with other owners or getting other owners, I had those horses to kind of get me going. So he was, you know, he was very, you know, instrumental into kind of giving me that push early on and getting me going out on my own.
So was Jenny involved with the sport at that time as well with her dad?
She never has been, other than a fan, of her, you know, her grandfather, Red Terrell, and then just kind of being around with her dad. She did help me with, you know, doing my books and stuff early on when we were first getting going. But other than that, she's mainly just been, you know, she's a teacher, so she always gets to Saratoga for the summers. I think that's why she is a teacher, so she has the summers off. But you know, so now mainly just a fan, and then, you know, helping me out early on.
And I mentioned your son, and then you have twin daughters, Riley and Reagan. Is that correct?
Yeah. They're 19 months old.
Wow. That's amazing. And your son is how old?
He's 4.5. He'll be 5 in December.
Has he started to show signs of wanting to be a horse trainer?
Oh, he actually, at this point, he's, and I remember doing the same thing. He still thinks he's going to be a jockey. And with me around 12 years old, that whole notion kind of went out the window. But I think the jockey's usually the first, you know, he runs around the table here for every race, pretend that he's riding the horse. So, he'll keep that dream until he's 12 years old and wearing size 10.5, 11 shoes. That kind of kills that. So
what if he comes to you and says, Dad, I want to be a jockey? What are you going to say to him?
Well, anything he does, he has to go to college first. So after he goes to college, he can, you know, then we'll be open to do whatever he wants. But those are the ground rules set down by me and his mother, that, you know, college is a must. And once he does college, then you know, he can do whatever his heart desires.
Same with the girls?
Yeah, that would go for them too.
Would you have a harder time with the girls if they said, "Hey, I want to be a jockey, Dad"? Would that be more difficult with them?
You know, it's just you know, just knowing how this sport is, it's tougher, definitely tougher for girls, because it always, you know, it's getting better now. Like I remember, you know, when I was around Forbes and stuff, that's when, you know, Julie Crone was kind of in her, doing very well. You know, and I think since then things have gotten better, and hopefully, you know, even by the time my daughters are old enough to you know, if they would want to get involved, to once they're to that point, it should be even, you know, that much better. But I still think there's always going to be a little bit of, you know, that it's like a man's sport. So I think it would just be harder for them, but hopefully if they would want to do it, it would be easier by the time they get to that age.
Talking with trainer Bruce Brown here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fazy Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network. So Bruce, you went out on your own, I guess, in 2008, and that first year was outstanding. You won with what, more than 20% of your starters that year?
Yeah, that's, you know, it really got off to a good start, and that's kind of, you know, and, you know, when people, you know, owners notice that stuff, you know, there's so much now with percentages and the form and everything. So, you know, that really got me a lot of new horses and a lot of new owners, you know, which isn't always good, because a lot of times, you know, those are the same people that leave you when you drop below 20%, you know, but, you know, it did get me, you know, jump started, and just was very lucky and blessed to, you know, get off to such a good start.
How much do trainers pay attention to those win percentages nowadays?
You know, I try not to, but it's kind of hard to not pay attention to it, because I like to kind of think of myself as more of an old school, you know, old school guy as far as trainers go. Is like I would rather run a horse fit than have to really train them till the cows come home in the morning and have them, you know, and you'll see it with my first time starters. A lot of times they'll need a race, or even coming back off a layoff, they'll need a race, to where if you're real worried about percentages, you might train them another month, you know, instead of running them. You know, that's where it gets a little, you know, you want to try to lead winners over there, but, you know, you don't want to change your philosophy on how you do things.
Yeah, and you mentioned some of the owners, and I know a lot of owners will scan through a list of potential trainers, and all they'll look at is the percentages. Does that put more pressure on trainers nowadays to have to win at a higher percentage if they want to keep owners around for a longer time?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, it is. It definitely is, you know, the the one major thing that they look at. I mean, I think now at this point I've kind of gotten, you know, right now I have a very good steady base of clients that that have been with me for a while, and I'm pretty confident that you know aren't going anywhere anytime soon. So that takes a little pressure off. You know, where you can afford to, you know, you're always going to be looking for new clients, but it's good to have that base, that strong base of people that you know are confident in you, no matter what the numbers. You know, they understand that you're going to have ups and downs, and you're going to have cold streaks, and you're going to have hot streaks. You just have to kind of try to level things out and take the highs with the lows.
Take me back to January 21st, 2008, and a little horse by the name of Goretti. That was at Aqueduct. He became your first winner that day, and not only did he win, he won by almost 8 lengths.
Yeah, it was a funny story because Chucky Lopez rode her that day, and Chucky Lopez rode the first, when I was working for Forbes, the first horse I ever saddled, the first winner I ever saddled at Atlantic City, Chucky rode her, or rode that horse too. So Chucky's been around for a few of my firsts, but no, that was a great day, and you know, just kind of got things rolling.
Do you remember what you said to Chucky when you gave him a leg up before the race?
Probably the same thing. Just good luck. And, you know, I think she was a speed filly. So, and with Chucky, you don't really, especially on a horse like that, you don't really have to tell him much. Just kind of get her out of there and go on with it.
What did you say to him afterwards?
Nah, I was just thrilled and just glad to, just good to get that first one, out of the way.
Yeah, she was 10-1. Did you cash?
I don't bet. Every now and then, maybe here and there, but very rarely. Yeah, I got out of that habit at a young age.
Smart man.
That was kind of through my teens and stuff, and then you get paid on Friday, and then Saturday you're looking for money to eat. but that broke me of that habit. So I never really, the way I look at it with the ones I train, I'm going to get money if they win. So I don't need to be greedy.
How'd you celebrate that first win?
We probably went out to King Umberto's over here, and like we usually do to celebrate wins here in Elmont. That's kind of the family restaurant where we always go. So,
Trainer Bruce Brown here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasic Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network. So you've had a lot of success. We talked about the fast start that you got off to in 2008. And then in 2011, here comes a little horse by the name of Compliance Officer, who was a $25,000 claim. And all of a sudden, you're in the spotlight in so many of the big New York bred stakes. Tell me about Compliance Officer.
He's been a real blessing to me and my family. I mean, my son, you know, that's all when he pretends he's a jockey, that's usually who he's riding. But he's just a great horse to get in the barn, and really, I mean, we've had a lot of fun with him for a long time now. I mean, he just won the other day. 8 years old, so he's still got it. Hopefully we can get him back to some of his old glory here this year. But he's just a great horse. He's always right, you know, his stall's always right in front of my office, so he's never far away.
Horses like that really do become like members of your family, don't they?
Yeah, and you know, my brother always told me at a young age, you try not to get too attached to them, just because, you know, bad things happen sometimes. But you know, horses like that, you can't help but get attached. And you're always going to have a few that you just really, you know, just kind of have a place in your heart.
I know you train for several different owners, but you've had a long relationship with Steve Zorn and Castle Village Farm. You've trained for them since 2009. Talk a little bit about that relationship and how important that's been to getting your career off to a good start.
Yeah, you know, it's, you know, with Steve, it's a rather large partnership. So it's always, you know, it's good to, you know, it's good to win races for groups like that. 'Cause you're, you know, it's, you know, when you win a race, it's like, how many people can you, you're worried if everybody's going to fit in the picture, you know, which is a good problem. I like, you know, I like to, you know, it's good to have as many people involved, you know, on good, happy occasions like that. So, but no, they've been great. And, you know, they do a little bit of, they're always looking to claim here and there, and they'll private purchase a horse here and there. So, but they're good. They're good to have around, and they've been very good for my business.
Well, Bruce, only about 2 minutes left, believe it or not, but I always like to wrap up the Trainer Talk interviews by asking trainers what it is they like to do outside of horse racing. When you do get a few minutes away from the track, a week vacation or whatever it might be, what other interests do you have outside of horse racing?
Well, a lot of times it's take a nap is first thing, but other than that, you know, now with the kids, you know, a lot of it's, you know, when are we planning our next Disney trip, or when are we going to Florida to see grandma and grandpa and stuff like that. But mainly just, you know, just kind of hang out with the family and relax. You know, I like when football season comes around to, I'm a big Washington Redskins fan, so I always like that during the fall and winter, and get be able to take a nice Sunday and just relax and watch football.
Will you go to many of the games down there?
I try to get to a game. You know, I try to get to one. I used to have season tickets. Now I try to get to one or two games, maybe one game down there, and then try to get to the Meadowlands for the Giants. You know, the Giants game once a year.
Well, Bruce, it's been an absolute delight to hear your story and to find out about your career and how you got started and some of the people that helped you. Can't thank you enough for being with me here on Trainer Talk tonight. All of our guests who appear on the program receive a gift courtesy of one of our sponsors, Flair Equine Nasal Strips. So we'll go ahead and get those out to you. And again, thanks so much and all the best. Continued success.
Thank you very much. Thanks.
All right, trainer Bruce Brown here on the first half of Trainer Talk this evening. It's all presented by Phasic Tipton. Stay tuned. Second half coming up next here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Why sell at Phasic Tipton's summer selected horses of racing age sale?
Market trends.
Current market trends create huge premiums for horses with recent form.
Timing.
The July 14th sale date falls during transition time for stables and provides meaningful racing opportunities for new owners.
Flexibility.
The online catalog only until time of sale allows for entries to be taken up to 1 week prior to the sale date.
Innovation.
The online catalog features updated pedigrees and race records as they occur, along with Rogozin sheet numbers and race replays.
Graduate success.
2013 sales grads are off to a fast start, including Grade 3 winner Candyman E and stakes winners El Sano, Chow Bella Luna, Home Run Birdie, and Jaycito. Last year's inaugural sale was a tremendous success with an average of $105,000, a median of $45,000, with a low RNA rate of just 15%. The Phasic Tipton Summer Selected Horses of Racing Age Sale, Monday, July 14th in Lexington, Kentucky. Visit phasictipton.com for more information.
The New York Thoroughbred Breeding and Development Fund means business for New York. Together with all equine pursuits in the Empire State, we pay more than $187 million in taxes and provide 33,000 jobs. We provide scholarships for young people who want to join the New York horse industry, and we encourage everyone to support all thoroughbreds all their lives. Visit nybreds.com to learn more about why the fund means business.
Breathing easy is the key to equine performance and health. That's why horsemen around the world count on Flair nasal strips to protect the lungs of their equine athletes without drugs. Flair strips gentle support of the nasal passages reduces the soft tissue collapse that occurs in all horses during intensive exercise. 7 clinical studies prove the benefits of flare strips for reducing lung bleeding, reducing fatigue, and shortening recovery time. Reduce bleeding, recover faster, perform better. Prevent, protect, perform with flare strips.
Have you dreamed of owning a racehorse, or have you already experienced the thrill of visiting the Winner's Circle? Either way, the inaugural Thoroughbred Owner Conference at Keeneland has something for you. Expert panel discussions, presentations from Thoroughbred trainers and owners, a day at the races, social events, and even a keynote address from Hall of Fame golfer and Thoroughbred owner Gary Player. Mark your calendar for the Thoroughbred Owner Conference in Lexington, Kentucky, October 13 through 16, and visit ownerview.com today to register. That's ownerview.com.
On Sunday, July 6th, watch the $1 million Queens Plate live from Woodbine Racetrack. This year's race marks the 155th anniversary of the Queens Plate, the first jewel in Canada's Triple Crown of Thoroughbred Racing, and the longest continuously run stakes race in North America. Woodbine will guarantee the early pick four pool at $100,000 and the late pick four pool at $250,000. Woodbine will also be offering 20-cent bet minimums on all Triactor, Pick 3, Pick 4, and Superfecta pools that afternoon. Watch the Queens Plate live from Woodbine on Sunday, July 6th, post time 12 o'clock Eastern. For more information, visit queensplate.com.
Want to know what we're up to?
Yeah.
Then log on to horseracingradio.net.
It appears that the website has become alive.
Horseracingradio.net is your official home for HRRN on the web. Read our blogs, download our podcasts, link up to our Twitter and Facebook pages, listen to live streaming of all of our broadcasts, and much more. HRRN is your home for racing's biggest events, and our home on the web is horseracingradio.net. That's horseracingradio.net.
Hi, this is Calvin Burrow. You're listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
This is Trainer Talk on HRRN Live, presented by Fasig Tipton.
And welcome back to Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch, in our Lexington, Kentucky studios, along with my producer, Lee Delapina. Really fun visit with Bill Kaplan in the first half of the program, and really looking forward to the second half of the show. Going to be joined in just a moment by trainer Jose Garofalo, the man who has trained 325 career winners, including this year's Fountain of Youth winner, Wildcat Red, hoping to be the Florida Derby winner coming up. More than $6.7 million in purse earnings to their credit, and the native of Venezuela, nice enough to spend some time here on Trainer Talk tonight. Jose, thanks for taking the time.
Hi, Mike. Hi, everybody there. Thank you for having me again in your program.
Yeah, happy to have you back on board. And the last time you and I spoke, you were smiling from ear to ear after leading Wildcat Red into the winner's circle of the Fountain of Youth. Has that smile gone away yet?
No, it's still on. The smile is still on my face because I'm very optimistic for the next race. Hopefully, everything is going to be all right for the Florida Derby.
Well, take me back to the beginning, Jose, and tell me about getting into horses. Obviously, your family was involved, so you kind of had it in your pedigree. Take me back to the beginning and growing up in Venezuela, how it all came to be.
Well, the first time I have a contact with a racehorse was around the 1970, 1971. Those days, my father has a horse. He was an owner of a filly and one of his friends' barn in La Rinconada in Caracas. And I used to go with him in the morning to the breezes in the morning. We used to go in the morning early to see the breezes of his horses. So those days, the first time I entered in the barn in La Rinconada, I remember like if it was yesterday, but as soon as I saw the horses, I was impressed, and I think that was the moment when I fall in love with the horses, with the business. So I remember very clearly that day when I went with my father to his barn, and I think that was the switch that made me feel sure of what I was going to do in the future.
What
that was the very, very beginning. That's the first memories that I have with the contact with the horses. Before that, we used to go to the farm, to my father's farm. I used to get along with the horses, but not the race horses. So then the story continues.
What did you like most about being around the horses at that age, Jose?
Well, I enjoy the animal. I enjoy the contact with the animal. I love the horse. I love the nobility of the horse. The way they give you all they have for us, for the business. And I appreciate that. It's an animal that can give us everything, even their lives, to give us a lot of satisfactions in this business. So I like the animal. I'm an animal lover in general. I love every animal, but especially the race horse is the one that caught my attention since I was a kid.
What did your dad try to teach you when you were hanging out around the barns and watching the breezes? What was it that he tried to teach you when you were that age?
Well, the first thing that they always taught me, it was this respect for the animals. Being a farmer, my father also has a cattle farm. Being a farmer and people that live out of the animals, the first thing that they taught me was the respect for the animal. Even if they train for you or they work for you or you sell them or you have to live out of them, you have to do business with them, you have to respect the life of the animal. In this case, you have to respect the horse race. And you have to try to give them the best environment, the best situation for them, because they give you everything to you. And I've been raised and I've been raised because of the animals, help my family to be a decent family, to have an education, to have the food on the table. And that's the first thing that I learned from my father, the respect for the animals.
Were there any other members of your family that were involved or are involved with racing right now?
No, you know, it's a funny story, because I have two sisters and a brother, and any of them were involved with the business. I have a sister who is a medical doctor. The other one is a dentist. My brother is a chemical engineer, but they have nothing to do with the horse business. They used to go to the racetrack to see the races. They used to go to the farm, but as fun. They just went for fun, not professionally. They're not involved in the business. So I was the only one who had that interest for the horse business. And I went to college. I have my degree, like I told you before, but I decided to stay here with the horses.
Yeah, it's interesting that you decided to go to college and get a degree. It was in law, so you have your law degree, but that was, even when you were going to school, that was never really what you wanted to do, was it?
Yeah, I was sure. I was sure since the beginning. I like to study, because it improves you as a person. It makes you grow as a person. It gives you a different view of the life. It's good for your own personality. But what I really wanted to do was always be a trainer, be in contact with the horses. And I'm lucky, because I have the chance to do it, and I have the support of my family, of my father, and the support of my owners, and I'm here now. I'm here still trying to make a way of living of this beautiful business.
What was the reaction of your parents when you told them that this is what you wanted to do for a living?
Well, you know, my parents, they always support us. They always give us the chance to decide what we're gonna do. They never had any influences on us. They let us do whatever we wanted to do. They let us develop as a human beings, as a person, the way we want it. So they never put any limitations on us. So my father for sure was very happy. But I remember his words when I told him that I was going back to the racetrack. His words were that I picked the most difficult job in the world to be a horse trainer. But he was happy. And the bottom of his heart, he was happy that I was staying with him in the horse business.
Yeah, I thought it was great when you told me the story about graduating with your law degree, and the very next day you turned around, you handed the degree to your mother, you handed the medal to your father, and the next day you were on the racetrack.
That's exactly what I did, and I'm still here on the racetrack.
Now, one thing,
happily
by the way,
ever after.
Talking with Jose Garofalo on Trainer Talk presented by Phasic Tipton, one thing, Jose, that caught my attention as you and I had a chance to speak when I was in Florida was the fact that you attended trainer school in Venezuela, and we don't have anything like that here in the United States. It's a completely different approach to getting involved with this aspect of the business, isn't it?
Yeah, it's totally different. We used to have in Venezuela a very good trainer school. You have to go to high school and get a degree from high school to get into the trainer school. We used to study a lot of very important matters like anatomy, physiology, and things like that to become a trainer. And at the same time, when we were in the school, we had to work in a barn. We have to be working for a trainer before getting our license there. So I spent 2 years in the trainer school, and before getting the trainer school, I spent like two or three more years as an assistant trainer for one of the biggest trainers down there in those days. So we have to study a lot. I remember that we have a lot of tests, and we have to have a lot of practices. We'll have a class of practices every day. So it was hard those days. I don't think they have the schools, the trainer school nowadays, but those days was a very important trainer school in Venezuela, and it was good because we have a very good generation of trainers that we were educated down there in those years. I'm talking about the 80s. Between the 85 and the 90s, maybe. Since then, I don't think that they have that kind of schools anymore in my country.
Did you actually race horses in Venezuela before coming to the United States?
Pardon me?
Did you race horses in your name
in
Venezuela?
Yeah. Well, I ran there. I won like 100 races there before coming here. I had a nice barn there, but I decided to quit because the situation in my country, the business was starting to get bad. There was a lot of gambling, a lot of problem with the bookies down there. So I decided to quit because it was a tough business those days. And at the same time, it was for me a challenge to come here to the United States. And I have the chance to come up here. A couple of owners gave me the chance to come up here. And then I'm here. And then I started training here in 1999. I'm still here trying to do the best that I can.
What do you remember about coming to the United States for the very first time?
Well, when I came in 1999, I was here before. I forgot to mention that when I finished the trainer school and the law school in Venezuela in 1998, I come up here to work for a trainer here in Florida, and I spent like 3 years here working for a trainer. Actually, I get my trainer license those days, but I went back to Venezuela because we have the farm in those days. I wanted to go back to my country and work in my farm and have my own barn, which I did in 1991. Then I spent like 6 or 7 years training in Venezuela, and then I come back here. But when I came back in 1999, I pretty much knew where I was coming. I know that it was going to be difficult. I knew that we need the support of the owners because it's kind of expensive for us to come here and buy horses. But we made it. We made it. Finally, after a few years, we established a nice barn, and we've been here competing with everybody in this country, in this beautiful country.
Well, you know, you didn't waste any time getting to the winner's circle when you first came to the United States. Wasn't it your very first starter?
Yeah,
ended up winning?
That was a very nice story because the first horse that I claimed in the United States, the first race that I ran, I won it. So that was a very good stimulus to keep going. I was a nice horse. I claimed the horse for 12.5. As far as I remember, for 12,500, the horse ended up winning like 5 or 6 races for me, and we made very good money out of the horse. I don't know if I mentioned the name of the horse before, Red Former.
Yep.
So winning your first, I think that I won my first 2 or 3 races here, so that was very encouraging because as soon as I got here, I started winning races.
Yeah.
And I wasn't expecting that. It was a nice surprise to start winning winning back-to-back races.
How difficult was it to build up a clientele and to build your business having come here from another country?
Well, for us, it's a little bit more difficult. The first thing is because of it's more expensive here because of the money exchange. That's the first thing. Secondly, the mentality of the Venezuelan owner is totally different than here because we're not used to the claiming races. Excuse me. In my country, when you buy a horse, the horse practically becomes a member of the family. So we never sell it. We never put him in a claiming race. Actually, we don't have too many claiming races down in Venezuela. Excuse me. So it's difficult to try to train with that kind of mentality when you have to come here and put the horses in claiming races and you sell them and you lose them and you buy them. And I had to explain to my customer how the system was. And it took me a while. It took me a while to make them understand that here the business is totally different. It's a very dynamic market. You buy it, you sell, you don't keep the horses for too long. And most of the times you can make some profit of horses if you sell them or if you claim them. And in the first times, my people didn't understand that. But nowadays, they know how the business is here, how different it is. they've been keeping their support. But it was difficult in the beginning. They didn't understand that. But now they do, and they do it very good.
Talking with trainer Jose Garofalo on Trainer Talk presented by Fasic Tipton here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Jose, you mentioned the name Red Former, the name of your very first winner back in 1999. And you told me you've had a lot of luck with horses with red in their name, including Wildcat Red, who won the Fountain of Youth this year at Gulfstream Park. But you're not a fan of the color red in any way.
No. Like I mentioned you before, I'm not a fan of the color red because of it's a political reason. The red is the color that identifies the communism, and in my country now we have a very, very bad problem with the government who wants to install the communism in my country. So my people is fighting against that, and that's the reason why I don't like the color red. Even if I have good luck with the red names, you know. So that's the reason why. It's just a personal, it's a personal issue with the color, with the red color. But mostly because of, it's the color of revolution, what they call revolution, and I don't like that kind of system. I'm born in a free country with human rights and with the freedom to do anything. Now they want to put a lot of pressure on my country to install the communists. And they're fighting against that. And like I told you before, I think they're going to make it.
I know most of your family is back in Venezuela. Is it difficult for you to be here in the United States with that turmoil, with your family being back in Venezuela?
Yeah, we're very worried about them. Even if we have a lot of contact, I speak to my family almost every day. Thank God they're good, but you never forget them. So even if you're here and they're there, we always worry about them and about the situation in general in the country, especially for the kids. I have like some nephews and nieces, and I worry about their future. But sooner than later, they're gonna overcome all the problems. And I think that the country is gonna be in a better situation. But it's an issue for us here to think about our people down there. It's difficult, and it's always we always have them in our minds.
Wildcat Red is an amazing story right now in your barn, Jose. But would you say that a filly by the name of Yara, who won the Grade 2 Devona Dale Stakes in 2012, might be the one that kind of put you on the map, at least nationally?
Well, you know what? Every time you have a good horse, you think that then another one will come later. And that what happened with the Wildcat Red. When I had the Yara, she put me in the big races. And I always thought that after Yara, it was going to come another one. And now it's like I read the one who is giving me the chance to be in the big races and in the big screen here in the United States. And after like I read, I'm sure that there will be some more coming in the future. Because that's where you work. You work for a future. You think about, always think about to have a good horse. That's where we're working. It's why we're here. We got to have an illusion. We got to have a goal all the time. Otherwise, we wouldn't be here, in my opinion.
You know, it was interesting. After the Fountain of Youth, there was very little red in the winner's circle. There was a bright pink suit. There was yellow, bright yellow, but there was very little red. And, of course, those other colors worn by the owners of Wildcat Red. Talk about them and talk about the relationship you have.
Well, we started our relationship as friends because I was introduced by a common friend that we have in Venezuela. They never had a horse, a race horse before. They're very new in the business. So we started our relationship about a year or a year and a half ago with a cheap horse. The filly did something. She won a race, but they are animal lovers too. So they wanted to stay in the business, and that's why we bought Wildcat Red. But they're very nice people. I mentioned to you before that they are animal lovers. They spend a lot of money in foundations that take care of the animals in Venezuela. And they wanted to stay here. They wanted to stay in the business, in the horse business. And the second horse that they had was Wildcat Red. It's Wildcat Red now. So they're very new. They're very good people. They give me all the confidence. And they let me do my job. And that helps a lot when you have an owner that lets you do what you think you have to do and let you work, and they put all their confidence in what I'm doing, and that's a very good help.
How would you describe your training philosophy, Jose?
My training in general is very conservative. I take very good care of a horse. I don't breathe too much. I try to keep the horse in shape with gallops, strong gallops when the horse is needed. But I try to avoid to train the horses in the morning too fast. My breezes are very, very easy. I try to keep I learn how to keep a horse in shape only with gallops, no breezes, because that make the horse last longer in most of the times. We are supposed to a lot of problem with the injuries, but if you are conservative with the training, these horses can last longer. And the key of the business is to have a horse that runs as many times as you can, because that's where the money is in the races. You don't do nothing breathing a horse in the morning that works a minute or 59, and it's going to last maybe two or three races, and you never see the horse running again. So that's why I think that I am very conservative with the training in the morning. So I think that's why that is part of my success, because I usually work with cheap horses, claiming horses, claimers, that they're not the best horses of the country, so I have to take an extra care of them. I have to keep them in shape and keep them sound. And my style of training, I think it fits to that kind of horses. So basically, I'm very conservative in my training.
Only a couple minutes left, Jose. I always like to end these Trainer Talk interviews by asking trainers what it is they like to do outside of horse racing. I know you probably don't get a lot of free time, but what other interests or hobbies does Jose Garofalo have?
Well, I like sports. First, I like baseball. I follow the baseball every season. I like the big leagues. I go a lot to the ball games. And I also like the beach. I enjoy the beach here in Florida every week. Maybe that's the reason why I live here in Florida, because we're close to the beach. And I'm very fan of the sports. I used to play baseball in my college, and I still enjoy playing softball once in a while with my friends here in Florida. So I like the sports in general. I go to the Dolphins games once in a while, which I love, and I go to the Marlins games all the time. I have a bunch of friends that are involved with baseball and with the major leagues, and I enjoy a lot being with them in the baseball season.
What position did you play in college?
Pardon me?
What position did you play in college?
I play. For my college, until I played baseball, until I graduate, maybe in 1988, I was a catcher in my team, and I play A class. I played double A. My country.
Oh wow! Well, did you have a favorite player growing up that you idolized?
Pardon me?
Did you have a favorite player growing up that you looked up to?
Yeah, a lot of them. I like, you remember Andrés Galarraga? He was one of my favorite players.
Sure.
And before we had a good shortstop, Venezuelan shortstop, maybe you remember him, Dave Concepcion, used to play for the Reds, for Cincinnati.
Sure.
I used to follow him a lot. Then we had, remember Ozzie Guillén?
Sure,
I used to follow him a lot. Omar Vizquel, a lot of them. I followed the baseball since I was a kid.
Well,
I used to play since I was a since I was a child.
Well, Jose, I think you made the right career choice, my friend, and I want to wish you all the best moving forward with Wildcat Red and all the horses in your stable. Thanks so much for taking the time, and can't wait to see you again when I'm back in Florida.
Mike, thank you very much, and you will be welcome here anytime you come, okay? So thanks for having me again, and thanks for everybody to listen at your program.
Thanks, Jose.
You guys have a good day.
Thanks, you too. Jose Garofalo here on Trainer Talk. Want to thank Bill Kaplan, Jose, my producer, Lee Delapina. I'm Mike Pennell. We'll talk to you next time on Trainer Talk.